Here in the Northern Rockies, dark winter months are outlasted in basements, dens, and nooks, where kindred souls gather to share intel, swap fly patterns, and relive the memories from seasons past. This gathering spot, known locally as a February room, is the inspiration for this podcast. No matter the season, the door is always open to those with a fly fishing story to tell. Brought to you by CD Fishing USA, the North American distributor for Composite Development's fly rods and fishing accessories. Tech, precision, ingenuity, legacy. Go to cdfishing.us and follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Here's your host, Lauren Carnop, and this is The February Room.
Welcome to The February Room. Today, my guest is Blaine Tomlinson. Blaine has an incredible resume from working with medical devices, but the title that we're going to focus on today is that you work with Project Healing Waters, and you're on the board of trustees, and you're in Long Beach, California. So thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to talk with you.
Pleasure is all mine. And Blaine, I know that you have traveled all around the world fly fishing. And before we get into what Project Healing Waters is, I'd like to hear a fishing story.
Boy, there's so many to talk. I guess I'll talk about one where I heard one of your interviews by one of your past anglers, which was Josh Lauer on the Mighty Mo. Brent Harding and I, we've been fishing with Josh for probably 20 years. Not every year, but we get up there like every other year or so with Josh, because I don't live in Montana anymore. I went to school there. I went to Carroll College in Helena, so got to fish the Mo a lot. And we went down there to fish from Holter down to Craig. And when we got there, I didn't realize it was that the Mother's Day Caddis Festival. And I don't think Brent knew that either. So we decided, Josh, you know, being Josh, he said, hey, let's go down. We'll put in here at Craig and float down. And so we did that, and there weren't any bugs. And then probably about 11:30, it was overcast. It was cold. You know, your fingertips are going numb. And then all of a sudden, it was like the sky opened up, and it was the first March brown hatch of the season. And it was so thick. It was, you almost had to put a bandana on your face to stop from breathing them in. And then these huge sippers just started going crazy. So it turned out to be an epic day, because after pulling into Craig and seeing about 45 trailers and boats and a crowd of a couple hundred people, it was like, oh man, this is not gonna work. So that ended up being an epic couple days. And the hatch was interesting. It started at about 11:30 and ended about, I'd say about 2. It was a long, long hatch. And then the next day, it started about an hour later and was an hour shorter. And then the next day, it was about a 30-minute window. And so then we just had to headhunt. You know, so, and Josh is working his butt off. We'd see a nose across the river, and he'd row over there. We'd hit that fish, and then back across. So we were zigzagging up and down the river, just headhunting. And if they showed themselves, they got hooked. But it was incredible to see such a huge March brown hatch.
Have you ever seen anything like that again, or was that the last time?
Not like that. I've seen a hatch like that on Rock Creek during the salmon fly hatch, where they were so thick, you know, you're just covered in them. But nothing like that for the March browns. I haven't seen a hatch like that ever.
Yeah, I think I remember one time I was in the salmon hatch, and I opened up my mouth and had a couple fly right into the back of the throat.
Well, they're a meal. They're a meal on themselves, by themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Why pack a lunch when you've got the food right on the river? Well, right. Blaine, I know you do some incredible work with a nonprofit organization, Project Healing Waters. Can you tell me a little bit more about that organization?
Yeah, Project Healing Waters is called Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. But as our CEO, Todd DeGrossier, a great man, former, Marine, He led the battle in Fallujah, was awarded the Silver Star, and he suffered a TBI. And it's not about the fly fishing, it's rehab. And it's some of the most powerful traumatic brain injury and PTSD rehab that I've seen. And I in the past, before I started my own company, treating neuropathy, I ran the traumatic brain injury out of Mission Hospital, and we trained level one, level two trauma centers across the country in a new traumatic brain injury protocol. And although this was at the initial trauma point when the injury occurred, did a lot of research on post TBIs. Traumatic brain injury is kind of important to me. One of my best friends in high school suffered a severe TBI in a car accident. And then also my father suffered a TBI, got kicked in the head by a horse, got kicked in the forehead. So lost a bit of his, quite a bit of his executive functioning. But what doctors Grant and Laskowitz, I guess, they're both really top notch in post rehab for TBIs. And neuroplasticity, neuroscience in general, is still real nascent, and we're learning more and more every day. But one of the critical things that they talk about for a successful outcome is continuous, repetitive, post ongoing activities with the fine motor skills. And so tying flies and building rods for these guys, they don't realize it, but they are doing rehab. And so, we talk about the fly fishing as a tool and activity to do as a recreational therapy, but it's more about getting together and having them focus on using their fine motor skills and doing it continually and repetitively over and over and over. And that helps with the neuroplasticity.
Do you have someone in mind someone who had a severe TBI, did you see the effects of the program change the severeness of someone's TBI?
Well, yes. I mean, this guy didn't even speak when he started the program. And so after about 5 years, this guy is now, you wouldn't really know he had a TBI. He might be searching for words sometimes. You ask him a question, he'll have to pause and wait a little while before, responding, because he's still searching. But his ability to ambulate, his casting is incredible. And he doesn't tie. His passion is casting. But now, if you met him, you wouldn't know that he suffered such a traumatic brain injury.
So do these veterans who enter the program, do they have to have previous fly fishing skills before joining?
No, they don't. That's the beauty of it. And we actually like that if they're new to the sport. But they do have to have a disability rating from the VA. Sadly, we can't offer the service to every veteran. Because one of the other reasons I do this, I mean, we help any disabled vet. It doesn't matter what the disability is, but my passion is traumatic brain injury, and then also the PTSD aspects. Because I broke my back at Officer Canada School in Quantico, broke a couple vertebrae. So I wasn't able to serve, but I'm engaged in this program and I believe in this program because it gives me an ability to serve the guys and gals that did serve, that committed to put the uniform on and face combat. And so there's been a number of studies, Mass General, back in 2009, Mass General, along with a couple other universities, I can't remember who it was, but also with the VA, and they showed that after fly fishing and doing a fly fishing for a couple days, these vets with PTSD, severe PTSD, slept better. They didn't take as much medication, and they had less anger issues. And then didn't quite know why. And Harvard had another study where they compared fly fishing and the casting. You know, you're a caster, so you know when you're casting and you're zoned in on that one motion, looking to where you want to position that fly, that's a form of meditation.
I think everybody who's on this podcast, it's always asking, what does fly fishing mean to you? And it's a way of getting lost in the moment and kind of letting your body take over the mechanisms. And for me, I don't even exactly think about it. But I imagine for these veterans, it's starting to become starting their motor skills or just their PTSD to get lost in a moment and lose track of time. And I think these days, especially even during coronavirus and the way that, you know, with the fires, you can tend to get lost in just this anxiety. But when you're on the river, it doesn't seem like that exists.
Yeah, well, with these vets, what the ones that are suffering real severe PTSD is they realize that in a study that they produce less cortisol.
And what is cortisol?
Cortisol is a chemical in the brain. It's secreted at the beginning of the fight or flight mode. You know, when you go to fight or flight, it basically covers the synapses and gets them ready to go into action. And then it's a complete cycle. What happens is either the brains don't produce enough or it's being absorbed faster. But for you and I, if we go into fight or flight mode, what cortisol also does, it initiates the cycle, and then it also helps to end the cycle. So you have to have enough to complete the whole loop. And what happens at the end of the loop is that your brain goes into a state of calmness, and then you go back to baseline. Well, without enough cortisol, these folks with the PTSD, they're in constant fight or flight mode. They may look like they're functioning normally, walking around, they look okay, but chemically their brain is still in that mode. Wow. So the casting, the repetitive casting, what it does is we're forcing them or tricking them into meditating. You can't take a hard and battled Marine and say, hey, well, I want you to meditate every day for 30 minutes. They're just not going to do it. So this is a way of tricking them into calming back down the system. And if you continuously do that and do it over and over repetitively, that helps bring about that state of calmness. So then the brain establishes a new baseline that they haven't felt pre-combat.
Wow. So the more that they do this, will these effects continue on outside of fly fishing?
Correct. That's the theory, and I've seen it happen. The body doesn't know a baseline. If it's locked in this fight or flight mode for over, you know, let's say they've been exposed to combat for, you know, 6-8 months, you know, off and on, and you're over there in the sandbox, you're on edge constantly. You're in this heightened state of awareness. And then when you come home, you're still there and your body knows this is a new baseline for you, and you can't get back down to a relaxed state of mind.
Do you have somebody that you remember coming in being like, wow, is this going to work for this severe PTSD patient? And did you see the outcomes, and do you still keep in touch with them?
Yes, there's actually a guy that we've been shut down. We haven't been able to take people on trips because of the COVID, but we're doing fly tying and rod building and chatting as groups online. So we're keeping Project Healing Waters moving forward, and doing it all online. However, as a friend, he and I went fishing up to Bishop on the Owens River, and he has a severe PTSD, Vietnam vet, machine gunner, and was on a lot of medication to help with his PTSD, his sleeps. Couldn't sleep very well, would wake up in cold sweats. And now he doesn't take any medication.
Wow.
But, you know, that's over a couple years.
And what has he said that about the program? Like, does he contribute all of that to Project Healing Waters fly fishing?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a number of guys that have told me, one in particular, fellow Marine, and there's one point in his life where, you know, he had his 45 in his mouth, and had it not been for Project Healing Waters, he wouldn't be here. And he'll tell you that Project Healing Waters saved his life. He tried all the other programs through the VA. There's something different about being off site, outside of a clinical setting, to help restore the trust, to help rebuild the camaraderie that they've longed for, and. The healing aspects of it are just so much more powerful because they're outside of the clinical setting and they're relaxed and they're talking with each other about experiences that you or I cannot comprehend.
I just find the whole thing to be just so wonderful. And, you know, once they're in this program, are they in the program for life, or is there like different? If you start the program, like you get onto a fishing trip, but you're always welcome to be part of these fly tying experiences, or how does that work?
Well, hopefully they'll stay in it for the rest of their lives. I mean, we want them to be engaged, totally engaged, you know, always. And the beauty of it is that once they come in, let's say they come in as a participant, the structure of the organization is that they become volunteers themselves, and they help teach other, recruit and bring other vets into the program. So it's like a mentor program.
Oh, I think it's just such a great network that you're working with some amazing people who decided to serve our country. And you do hear this, that veterans who, you know, they give up so much to serve their country, and they come back, and sometimes there's not enough programs to support them after these traumatic experiences they must have experienced physically, mentally. And I think it's great that someone decided fly fishing is a way to mediate between their brains and the way that they function physically and mentally.
Yeah, it came about like we were talking about earlier, about how life is just sometimes random. And well, like Buckminster Fuller says, you know, seemingly coincidentally, but realistically, processionally. And so Ed Nicholson, he's the founder, and he was at Walter Reed, and was I think recovering from cancer, and so he was getting treatment at Walter Reed, and he was just bored and called his wife and said, "Hey, can you bring me some of my rods and my fishing gear? I'd like to go outside and do some casting and practice." And he noticed that these other vets were staring at him and going, "Wow, that, you know, looks interesting." And so he asked them if they wanted to try it, and before long he had guys in gurneys that could move their arms.
Wow.
Casting. Guys in wheelchairs out there casting and just enjoying themselves. And so that's how it came about. Oh. It was just a fluke. And now it's grown to, you know, we have about 230 programs across the country, treat over 8,000 veterans a year.
So what is the next step with Project Healing Waters? Is there another trip that's going to be coming up?
Well, right now we're not doing any of the trips because of COVID. We can't travel. We're doing, like I said, daily, we're having fly tying classes and rod building. There's a lot of local programs. Well, here in Southern California, one of the closest places to fish freshwater for trout is the Owens River, and that's a 5.5-hour drive. But there's programs there in Montana. There's one in Hamilton, Idaho. Right now, they can fish on their own, but as an organized Project Healing Waters trip, we're putting together a standard of care and what we need to do one-on-one casting and then day trips, no overnight trips. And then we'll slowly follow the VA protocols and put together our own roadmap of how we're going to go forward with COVID. And we have the Harbaugh Foundation, along with Anonymous. Joe Bala is the executive director of the Harbaugh Foundation, and they bought 40 acres, I believe it's about 40 acres, outside of Wise, Montana, and built this phenomenal 5-star lodge. It's kind of like a lodge. It's called Freedom Ranch. And it's in Wise. It's on the Big Hole, and they help bring 8 vets up there for 20 weeks during the summer. Every week, there's a new group of veterans going to Freedom Ranch, and so you've got all the local guides. There's guides that come down from Butte. That's one of the programs that we do annually. So there's 20 trips. We have national trips. And then each program, like the Colorado Springs program, a lot of the local landowners and ranchers, and a lot of the water is private in Colorado. And their laws are different than in Montana, where, as you know, if you can cross at a bridge and stay below high water mark, you're good to go. Well, in Colorado, that's not the case. They own down to the center, the middle of the river. So if you don't know somebody and it's private, you're not going to get on that water. But they do like 52 trips,
which is so important in Colorado Springs, because you have the Air Force Academy, you have Fort Carson, NORAD's right there. I grew up in Colorado Springs, so I know that having a service like that in the Springs,
they're one of our largest programs there.
I guess I was going to ask you, I mean, even if you aren't a veteran and maybe you're an active in the military, can they join the program?
If you're active duty, yes, they can. Yes, they can. And then, you know, if they're stationed, you know, have to change locations, they can, you know, it's a big network. It's like a family. They're active duty or injured in medical rehab, or they're out and have the disability rating, then they can join.
I think that's so great, because like you said, before we jumped on the podcast, we're just talking about how awesome the fly fishing community is. And everyone, if things aren't going right with the podcast, I'm always like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I apologize. But there's always this, like, on the other line, like, it's okay. I'm all right. Like, we can take our time. And I think it's so great for these men and women who dedicate their lives for protecting us and our country, and for us to also in return give them an organization that wants to protect their mind. And it kind of gives me, especially in these times when things look so not great and it's like 2020, I think that's like the big meme, is like, blame it on 2020. It's good to hear that there's really amazing organizations there and people within those organizations that are making the world feel a whole lot better, and people are wanting to make it better.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great group, and anybody that has any fly fishing skills or any skills, Salesforce, if they want to help, you know, if you have Salesforce skills or accounting skills or anything, you can volunteer. You can just go to the website, projecthealingwaters.org, and look in your region and find a program, and you can volunteer. We're always looking for quality volunteers. You know, it's like the Marine Corps way. You have to do more with less. And so every volunteer, every piece of value they can bring is always wanted and needed and appreciated.
If someone is looking for ways to contribute, I know you said there's volunteers, but maybe they're like, hey, I don't have time. What other ways can they help out with the organization?
Well, money is always important.
It is. No lie with that.
Yeah, they can find, like I said, go to projecthealingwaters.org and find you can either donate to headquarters, which is in La Platte, Maryland. And if they go to the website, they can see that. Or they can find a program closest to them and donate to that local program. Or they can call any time. They can call me. They can call any of our board members. And I tell you what, Todd DeGrosse, our CEO, before I was even, I was just a... I started as a volunteer, and I was just this little volunteer, and I called Todd, and he answered the phone. I mean, he's that kind of guy, salt of the earth, you know, kind of guy. And he's in it for all the right reasons. And again, I mean, I have to emphasize it because our mission is not fly fishing. Our mission is to rehab these soldiers and Marines. It's about rehabilitation and health, mental health and physical health, physical well-being. So I just want to highlight that's our mission, is the wellness of these folks. And fly fishing, we're just lucky that fly fishing is our passion. The two missions, you know, they're synergistic. So that's the beauty of it.
I mean, I think if you can have an organization that just brings people the outdoors and that can be healing, I think it's just above and beyond awesome. And I also know that you can also follow Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing on Instagram and on also Facebook.
Forgot to add, there's a Healing on the Fly in New York. Usually Healing on the Fly in New York is our largest fundraiser. It's an annual event. And this year it's going to be virtual. So we'll have speakers and then silent auctions. And that's 6th of October. And then also Healing on the Fly in Boston. And that's going to be the 27th through the 29th of October. They'll be auctioning off items like rods and float trips and, you know, all sorts of stuff, signed baseballs from athletes, you know, all sorts of stuff.
And how do they access the fundraiser?
It'll be on the website.
I think it's just so great, Blaine, and I really appreciate your work and commitment to making the world a better place, especially for the people who've made our country a better place.
Well, thank you.
Go to thefebruaryroom.com where you can access a complete library of our podcast and read more about our guests, their fishing stories, and favorite fly patterns. We're always looking for exceptional fly fishing yarns, and if you have one to spin, shoot us an email at info@thefebruaryroom.com. The February Room is always free, but if you feel like throwing a nickel in the pond, we appreciate any additional listener support. For companies and individuals interested in sponsorship opportunities, please contact us for our media kit. Thanks for stopping by the February Room, and we'll see you down here next week.